I applied to a few other schools, and when I interviewed at Crossroads, it was just like, no contest. Like, I really wanted to go here.
To date, we have never seen two guys holding hands walking across campus, so we still have a little bit of ways to go.
This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Gay priests become targets in Catholic child abuse backlash, kids at a crossroads dramatize a gay odyssey, and folkies from Australia, Canada, and the U.S. bring out new albums. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 27th, 2002. There were clear anti-gay strains among public remarks by several leading clergy this week in connection with U.S. Roman Catholic cardinals meeting with the Pope to discuss sexual abuse of minors by priests. The theme was generally represented by Detroit Cardinal Adam Maidas calling the issue not truly a pedophilia-type problem, but a homosexual-type problem, and saying that the U.S. Church needed to address the homosexual element in seminaries. He did later attempt a clarification, saying that homosexuals are not pedophiles, although labeling the current crisis mostly an issue of adolescents and priests. Head of the U.S. Conference of Bishops Wilton Daniel Gregory reported that homosexual priests had been an explicit topic in the discussions with the Pope and said that it is an ongoing struggle to make sure that the Catholic priesthood is not dominated by homosexual men. Chicago Cardinal Francis George echoed that sentiment in somewhat more subtle terms. While New York Cardinal Edward Egan was attending the meeting, Monsignor Eugene Clark gave a sermon at New York City's St. Patrick's Cathedral in which he declared that admitting gay men to seminaries is a grave mistake, citing church doctrine that the tendency to homosexuality is a disorder and the practice of homosexuality is truly sinful. The archdiocese later insisted that Clark was speaking for himself without prior approval from Cardinal Egan. And Clark himself later insisted that, "I did not associate homosexuals with the illness of pedophilia, although some priests had fallen, sadly, into man-boy relationships." The official report issued after the meeting with the Pope was also widely understood to target gay priests, with its vaguely worded prescriptions for a crackdown on dissent and an investigation of seminaries and their admissions requirements. An actual U.S. Catholic policy on sexual abuse of minors by priests will come from a bishop's meeting in June. Conservative Catholic activists joined the call to eliminate those of homosexual orientation from the priesthood. But the clerics' comments were widely criticized as scapegoating and a deflection from the issue by victims of priest sexual abuse, Catholic moderates, and the mainstream press. Gay and lesbian Catholic activists were outraged and have planned a protest demonstration in New York City.
Russian gays and lesbians demonstrated in the streets of Moscow this week dressed as inmates of Nazi concentration camps with a pink triangle, protesting introduction of a bill to recriminalize private consensual homosexual acts. Russia had repealed its sodomy law 9 years ago following the breakup of the USSR, but the right-wing People's Deputy Party's new proposal would provide for 1 to 5 years imprisonment. Party leader Gennady Rakov called homosexuality an abnormality which should be punishable by law. A number of other Russian politicians have spoken out in opposition to the bill, some calling it a blatant publicity stunt. The Russian Orthodox Church appeared to support the bill when its top foreign relations official called homosexuality a transgression against moral foundations and that viewing this practice as normal behavior backed by law is dangerous. The bill could come up for debate in the lower house of the state parliament in May or June, but is not expected to pass.
Thousands of demonstrators marched in at least 4 French cities after far-right winger Jean-Marie Le Pen of the National Front surprisingly knocked gay-friendly socialist Prime Minister Lionel Jospin off the May presidential ballot in a primary vote. Le Pen is expected to fail by a landslide in the upcoming head-to-head race against incumbent President Jacques Chirac, but his reputation for racism, anti-Semitism, and homophobia led some demonstrators to declare with signs, "I am ashamed to be French." AIDS activists are particularly dismayed since Le Pen in the past called for jailing people with HIV and AIDS, although he disclaims that idea now.
In Canada, Quebec's provincial government this week officially introduced its bill to create legal registered partnerships open to gay and lesbian couples, as well as unmarried heterosexuals. The so-called civil union registry would grant the same rights as traditional marriage, including adoption and access to assisted reproduction treatments.
The state of West Australia's sweeping legal reform package to recognize same-gender couples and establish civil rights protections for gays and lesbians has reportedly received its final assent from the governor, although the official proclamation has yet to be made. The omnibus bill also includes repeal of the state's anti-gay gross indecency law and equalization of the age of consent for homosexual acts with that for heterosexual ones. West Australia had previously had Australia's worst state laws for gays and lesbians, but will now have some of the best.
There have been several advances in the U.S. for legislation to protect the civil rights of sexual minorities. The Federal Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, was passed this week by a voice vote of the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Majority Leader Tom Daschle promised to schedule a Senate floor vote before adjournment in October. ENDA sponsors are confident that at least a bare majority of U.S. senators support the measure, but aren't sure they have the votes to block a possible filibuster by opponents. There's little hope for ENDA in the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. An earlier edition of ENDA failed by a single vote when it reached the Senate floor in 1996. That was the only time a U.S. national gay and lesbian civil rights bill has reached the floor of either house in more than a quarter century of lobbying.
The New York City Council this week voted 45-5 to extend its human rights ordinance to explicitly protect transgendered people from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. Mayor Michael Bloomberg promised to sign the measure, despite having argued previously that the existing law adequately protected transgenders.
The Tacoma, Washington City Council this week voted 8-1 to add both sexual orientation and gender identity to its human rights ordinance. The move would prohibit discrimination in employment and housing, but a repeal campaign is anticipated.
The Leon County, Florida Commission last week voted 6-1 to add sexual orientation to its non-discrimination policy. The county currently has no human rights ordinance, but will probably adopt one next year following a change in the county's own legal status.
And Savannah, Georgia, city manager Michael Brown this month added sexual orientation as a category protected under that city's equal employment policy.
U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney's lesbian daughter, Mary Cheney, generally refused to speak to reporters during the 2000 election campaign, but this week she issued an announcement that she's joining the board of directors of the Republican Unity Coalition. That's the self-described gay-straight alliance of politicians and activists seeking to build bridges between the gay and lesbian community and the Republican Party. Cheney wrote that, "RUC is an organization that reflects my fundamental beliefs and principles. Working together, we can make sexual orientation a non-issue for the Republican Party, and we can help achieve equality for all gay and lesbian Americans." Cheney is expected to make appearances to help RUC's fundraising, which has reportedly already been quite successful.
Two notable openly gay show business figures died this week. Popular BBC TV and radio host Christopher Price was found dead at the age of 34. While police have ruled out foul play, the exact cause of death has not yet been established. Price once described himself as fat, bald, homosexual, not ideal television material at all, but his sharp wit and journalistic skills had made him a rising star at the BBC. Indian activist and internationally acclaimed documentary filmmaker Nishit Saran died in an auto accident in New Delhi at the age of 25. His best-known works include 50-50, Perfect Day, Digital Talkies, and Summer in My Veins, which documented Nishit's own coming out to his mother.
In what Variety called the biggest upset of the Hong Kong Film Awards, open gay Stanley Kwan's Lan Yu came up empty despite nominations in 11 categories, including Best Film. The recognition it did receive, including 5 wins at Taiwan's Golden Horse Awards in December, has been considered a landmark in Chinese culture because it not only centered on a gay couple, but was set against the backdrop of the 1989 massacre in Tiananmen Square.
And finally, the long-running debate regarding Shakespeare's sexuality gained new fuel this week with a story one tabloid dubbed Shakesqueer. A 4-centuries-old portrait presumed for generations to depict a woman was publicly proclaimed by its owner, Alec Cobb, to represent Henry Wriothesley, the 3rd Earl of Southampton. He was Shakespeare's friend and patron, and some scholars believe he was the subject of a series of Shakespeare's early sonnets, which described a fair youth as the master mistress of my passion. Experts date the portrait from the early 1590s, the period in which those sonnets were composed. The young earl's long hair and earring were effeminate and unusual for the time, Cobb said. But Alistair Lang, the art advisor to Britain's National Trust, who first suggested the portrait subject was male and is now completely convinced of that, denies that Southampton was cross-dressing. He says that the impression the portrait gives of lipstick and rouge is an artifact of the way some pigments age differently from others. Susan North, a fashion expert at London's Victoria and Albert Museum, adds that Southampton's frilly collar and jewelry, as well as his long hair, were entirely appropriate for a man at the time, calling them signs of masculine fashion and not any sign of sexual preference. Some reporters' perception that Southampton's pursed lips and hand-on-the-heart pose are camp gestures is probably also an inappropriate modern projection onto Elizabethan times. With the painting now on display, the public will make its own judgments, doubtless in greater numbers, thanks to the publicity.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 27th, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
There's a whole lot more than 6 minutes of breathable air left in this week's show. And if you stay with us, you'll soon be crowing about the latest lesbian and gay music to come down Slow Burn Avenue. But first...
Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday, someday.
Although the idea that reading, writing, and arithmetic go down more smoothly with a heavy dose of liberating openness in the curriculum, there are still few schools in the U.S. that offer a real progressive alternative. Crossroads School of the Arts and Sciences in Southern California is one of the few places where kindergarten through high school students can enjoy a queer-friendly environment. This Way Out's David Bell visited Crossroads School, talked with students and administrators, and attended a theatrical production put on by members of the campus Friends of Lesbians and Gays group as a fundraiser for local queer youth outreach programs.
Being in high school and coming to terms with your sexuality can be a big deal. Students often wonder what will happen to them if they come out. Will their friends mock and ridicule them? Will they be kicked out of their house? Will they be beat up? Will they find love? Crossroads School for the Arts and Sciences in Santa Monica is a unique education environment. A full-service school from kindergarten to 12th grade, the school focuses on 5 basic principles: academic excellence, the greater community, a student population of social, economic, and racial diversity, the students' well-being, and the arts. These core principles have allowed the students at Crossroads to excel in many areas. The student members of FLAG, Friends of Lesbians and Gays, at Crossroads are no exception.
My name's Christina Moore, and I'm a 9th grade student at Crossroads, and I've been going to FLAG for about a year now.
My name is Josh Breslow, and I am a 10th grader. I've been going to Crossroads since 2nd grade, and I am, at the moment, the president of FLAG.
I'm Aaron Drozic. I'm also in 10th grade. I've been going to FLAG for about a year.
I'm Mike Levin. I'm a freshman. I joined FLAG because I am a big supporter of the cause, and a lot of my friends are big supporters, so I thought it was important to join FLAG.
There is a definite artistic flair to the school, which would lend itself beautifully to any endeavor that the students would decide to undertake. The talent is remarkable and very evident when a group of students gathers around a piano to mess around. One student plays, several sing, and some even dance. Is this normal or even typical teen behavior? Maybe not, but no one said that these teenagers were typical, and they seem to thrive here at Crossroads.
I really enjoy it. Like, I applied to a few other schools, and when I interviewed at Crossroads, it was just like, no contest. Like, I really wanted to go here. I was into art and the acting. I really, like, got into it there.
I think the really amazing thing about Crossroads is the relationship between the teachers and the students. I've gone to dinner with teachers just as friends, just for fun. There's a really strong relationship, and it makes the learning experience a lot easier.
One might think that Crossroads is an open and loving place, but if a student identifies as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, are they able to come out and still find acceptance? Adam Bierman is the Director of Human Development at Crossroads and one of the co-advisors of FLAG.
You know, it's when you talk about prejudice, it's not to say that at Crossroads we still don't face issues around anti-gay discrimination, that sort of thing. I mean, the school is very supportive on the administrative side and on the faculty side. I think the students, by and large, are very supportive as well. But to date, we have never seen two guys holding hands walking across campus, where you'll see a guy and girl holding hands walking across campus every day. So we still have a little bit of ways to go.
That is one of the reasons that these young men and women decided to write, produce, and stage a unique and groundbreaking production called Everything Possible, A Gay Odyssey. The central story of the production is that of Jason, a high school student coming to terms with his sexual identity, played by Josh.
It begins with him realizing that he's gay. So you start with him not knowing anything about it. It's his realization, and he goes through the process of accepting it, coming out to his parents, engaging in a relationship that he's not used to having, and eventually coming out to a bunch of people, his friends, family, and some people who have been really the opposite of friends.
The main story of the production is broken up by small skits dealing with such social problems as rumors, gossip, name-calling, and slang terms, like the ever-popular, "That's so gay." The kids do know how to have fun, though. Not all of the production was serious in nature. They told their own version of Rapunzel, with a gay-friendly twist and a drag queen witch. Despite the fun, the production concludes on a serious note, with Jason confronting the school bully for taunting him because he is perceived to be gay. And in fact, he comes out to him.
What, you're not gay?
No, I'm gay. I'm definitely gay. Just don't admit it. Admitting is something you do for something that's wrong or shameful, like a crime, and this is no crime, it's who I am. So now you can go over and tell everybody. The rumor's true. I'm gay. Well, I'm sure the word has already spread. Oh, but you don't have to worry about telling my parents, because they already know. And they're okay with it, too. So why is this such a big deal for you? Why is this so threatening that you have to lash out at us? I don't know. I guess it's none of my business. You can keep on pushing us around if that's how you get your kicks. But at the end of it, we'll still be gay. Yes, I'm gay. But I am nobody's faggot. Especially not yours. So, if you're gonna hit me, then hit me. If not, stop wasting my time.
The production received a standing ovation, and the students were called back on stage because the response was overwhelming. When a mother found out that this type of show was taking place, she came to talk to the students and offered her support.
There was one woman, a very nice woman, who came in to talk to us when she found out that we were doing a show. And she, as a teenager, was attacked by I don't know how many boys. They assumed that she was lesbian, and she got stabbed. And she was touched by the fact that we were doing this, and to know all that happened to her and we were helping with that. Meant a lot.
And as if this group of teenagers isn't remarkable enough for having put on this production, the money that they raised from their performance is all being donated to other groups. But don't think that this is the last time that you'll hear about these students. They are bound to continue to make news, not only in Los Angeles, but around the country. There is talk that the show may travel, and students are even cooking up some new ideas. This has been David Bell. Everyone can make a difference in their community, so go out and do something today.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valanche. When I'm not writing for the Oscars, appearing on Hollywood Squares, or lounging at Sky Bar with Bette or Whoopi, more olives, girl, thank you, I'm listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
This month's review of recent releases from the Audiophile features one newcomer and some veteran performers, two women's bands and a gay male solo artist, three Aussies, a Canadian, and a pair of Kentuckians. And they're all really folkies under the skin.
Australia's all-woman band Blue House delivers a mix of folk-based harmonies in a high-energy presentation style on their latest CD, 6 Minutes of Breathable Air. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you are listening to Audiophile. The performers who make up Blue House are Jackie Walter, Bernadette Carroll, and Samantha Harley, three women who have no qualms about being out, according to Jackie.
It's more important to be true to who you are as a person and not be a truck driver moonlighting as a plumber. So we were definitely always into being ourselves, and I think it's impacted on our career in that we can be really honest in our music as well, although our music doesn't have political content.
You can find out more about Blue House and their CD, 6 Minutes of Breathable Air, at www.bluehouse.net.
We call ourselves folk musicians, and the music is folk-oriented, but it's a lot more. There's a lot of pop influences and rock, and we like all kinds of music. We write the songs depending upon the styles that the song calls for, mostly.
When I trace the pattern of my days, always stumble on the outline of your face. Days when we were friends come running back again. I try to find
Kaya Hartwood and Miriam Davidson are Wishing Chair, and they are back with their fourth album called Crow.
Wishing Chair is not afraid to combine their folk roots with today's sensibility, including the very out song, She's Everything to Me.
I tried to make the most pop out song I could possibly do so that it would get out to the most people.
Not the way that you hold me, the way that you know me, the way that you say my name.
You can learn more about Wishing Chair and their CD Crow at www.terrakin.com. That's www.terrakin.com.
Andy Northrup comes from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, to bring us his debut CD called Slow Burn Avenue.
Where is she now? Why did he go? Same old excuse, and your boat sunk so low. You battled it out, let it sink.
Well, my CD's a folk rock album. It has a lot of rootsy country influence. It even has a bit of reggae thrown in there. If you like the singer-songwriter realm, I think you might be pleased if you give the album a spin.
Andy Northrup is an out artist, and he's not afraid to blend his folk and country rock sound with strong lyrics that have an edge.
My neo-fascist paperboy's mystique on display. Says he resents his regiment.
Find out more about Andy Northrup and his CD, Slow Burn Avenue, at www.anorthrup.com. That's www.anorthrup.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 429, Sunland, California, 91041. Or by visiting our brand new website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Sure they blame bureaucracy. It's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy. Because they promise anything they like and they
thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, David Bell, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. David Brown and Cher performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on multimedia, then on radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thank you for listening on CFRU Guelph, Ontario, WJSC Johnson, Vermont, KSUA Fairbanks, Alaska, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.